Okay, we're back again. It is January 20th, 2015. On the air.
Do you have any idea how many of these there have been so far? Is this number 19 or?
Roughly, yeah.
Very rough, okay. The last time, I believe we ended with my being invited to lunch by Dorothea Lange, the well-known photographer. Mm-hmm. And I was about to embark on a major change from the commentary series that I had been doing at Station KPFA, which had been devoted exclusively to farm labor subjects, including one that got me in a bit of trouble. I'm a little bit out of sequence here, but the one before my commentary that had to do with an exhibit of photographs, including Dorothea Lange's, which led to my meeting her. The one before that consisted of an open letter to Governor Edmund G. Brown, in which I pointed out to him that the Bracero program was scheduled to end on December 31st of 1964, and that there had been tens of thousands of braceros used in all of the California harvests up until that point, and that it behooved him to do something about replacing them. Otherwise, the farmers of his state were going to be without harvest hands, and that would do something to the price of fruits and vegetables. So I recommended that he call a special session of the legislature and lean on them to pass some bills which would make farm labor once again more attractive than they had been during the Bracero years. Well, I worded this somewhat trenchantly, and some people weren't too happy about it. Beginning with the governor's staff, and I heard by word of mouth that in fact, the letter never did reach the desk of the governor, and that they were sending out to the media that the things that I had said were unfair and many of them were untrue and so forth and so on. And I will say this about KPFA. They never leaned on me, pre-censored anything that I commented about. It was really an open forum, and there are not very many of those. There weren't very many then, and there still aren't. But my open letter certainly never had any effect on political decisions anywhere up or down the line. But to move on to the point that events led to a very dramatic change from my being the member of the stable of commentators that the station had, in which I had the specialty of talking about one particular social issue, there came about some events which forced me to go into totally different subjects. Namely, the subject of the station itself and its governance. KPFA had been founded back in the 1940s by some conscientious objectors who were at liberty after the end of World War II. They had been in prison during that time. But a group of them had the idea of establishing an FM station which would be supported entirely by listeners rather than by commercial sponsors or government aid or any other source. And they, of course, being the founders, automatically ran the station. I suppose they called themselves a board of directors or trustees or something of that sort. And that's the way it continued to function. Most of them were Quakers. And by the time I got there in the early 1960s, the station manager, a man named Trevor Thomas, himself had a Quaker background. And people all seemed to get along reasonably well. They had as their director of public, but I can't remember her exact title, current affairs, whatever it was. A woman named Elsa Knight Thompson was in charge of that department. They had somebody in charge of music and somebody in charge of drama and so forth. But Elsa was in charge of public questions, and that included me. And she was an irascible woman, and she and Trevor Thomas clashed over lots of things. I didn't know all of this background. But it reached a point that she devoted more of her time to working on the other members of the staff to turn them against Trevor Thomas. She would like to have had him fired. And apparently she made some headway with some of the staff members. There are always things to complain about in any structure. And the technical staff were all members of a union called the National Association of Broadcast Engineers and Technicians. Well, Trevor Thomas fired Elsa Knight Thompson. She really wanted to become the station manager, if you know the, want to know the background. And she had the votes of these people, but of course they didn't have a vote. There was still a self-appointed board of trustees over everything else. A self-perpetuating board, really. They were not subject to any constituency. Well, Tulsa, of course, was a member of the union. It wasn't limited to engineers and technicians, despite the title of the union. Other staff members were free to join, and I guess most or maybe all of them did. But Elsa's power within the local was so great that she was able to prevail upon the majority of them to go on strike. First time in the history of KPFA, but as it has turned out through the years, it was by far the last. I mean, it was not the last time. Now, I was very interested in this development. Felt it was very unfortunate, and that it was not really a question of either or, black or white, that there was something missing from the whole structure of KPFA, which I thought might really be the heart of the problem. And that is that there was a third party involved, really, who had nothing whatever to do with this contest between labor and management. And that was the program contributors and the subscribers or listeners, who had nothing whatever to say about this contest between the other two factions. And so, in April 3rd, for the first time, I deviated from my usual subject of agricultural labor and did a commentary upon KPFA and its very nature. And I entitled that commentary, Communication Without Representation. All of us in the commentary series were, of course, volunteers, paid. We got paid nothing, and served entirely at the pleasure of those above us in the hierarchy, namely Elsa, at the immediate level above us, and even above her would be the station manager. And it had absolutely nothing to do with the objective quality of our comments. It had absolutely nothing to do with how well we might be thought of by the listeners who were paying the freight for the entire operation. I guess at this point, I didn't have any recommendations for how to deal with this problem as I saw it, but I left it open and ended the commentary by asking people to write to me if they thought that I was on to some important part of the question. And if they had any suggestions. Well, a number of them did. And I took it on myself to answer each one of them. And suggest that we meet together and kick around ideas as to how the subscribers, that's what they were called, could become more involved in the station. Because up to the present time, they weren't involved at all, except paying their monthly dues. I can't recall how much they were. It was very modest. Well, about 20 of them replied. And we set up a meeting at the home of one of them. And on the 15th of April, we had our first subscribers meeting. Well, among other things, I didn't think that it was incumbent upon us or even helpful for us to take a stand on one side or the other of the conflict between labor and management in the strike. I thought that our role was to think of some positive role which subscribers themselves could play to help with the general direction of the station and the areas of quality. And one of the things that occurred to me was that more people prepare sample tapes of their own voices commenting upon it. Issues of interest to them, because there were a number of things that were not covered by the current crop of commentators, and a number of the commentators were in fact getting long in the tooth and were beating dead horses, such as the fellow who talked about the single tax movement, which had died probably a half century before. And other people thought of other things that one might do. Somebody suggested that a fund be set up to give fellowships to people who might want to put on a special program, a documentary in sound of an important subject, and whatever. Well, at that meeting, someone suggested we needed to have a few spokespersons appointed from within that group of approximately 20 people. And of course, somebody suggested myself. And nobody else seemed to be interested in taking the lead, and so I accepted, temporarily at least, and the whole thing was to be conditional upon how it might go as time went by. And so a name was adopted, which made it all sound temporary. And the name was Subscribers Interim Committee, or SIC for short. Which, of course, has a Latin equivalent. Now, this was pretty foolish on my part, because I already had so many things going. At this time, I was already the chairman of the organization called Citizens for Farm Labor. And I was usually the editor of each issue of the magazine that we issued, although sometimes I had a guest editor. And I did have this commentary series on KPFA. And I had a couple of families with commitments to, one in Berkeley and one in Martinez. And I should have said I just couldn't do it. And I guess the group would have had to select somebody else, or else forget the whole thing. And in addition to all of those extracurricular activities, I had a full-time job at the State Department of Public Health. In fact, that job was becoming more and more interesting and important to me, because Dr. Breslow, whom I have mentioned before, had succeeded in getting funding to put on a regular basis this body within the department, which he called the Medical Care Studies Unit. And that was a subject of great importance to me, because I had my master's degree in that from the School of Public Health at Berkeley. And in fact, I had been able to talk my immediate head of that unit, another public health physician named Bruce Walter, into an idea of mine, which was in a follow-up to and an enlargement upon a little project that we had been fooling around with for months before this time. Namely, how much did people at that time who were of advanced years, people over 65, let's say, how much were they having to spend out of pocket for their health care if they didn't have health insurance? Of course, Kaiser at that time already existed, but a lot of people were not covered by health insurance. the people who were not covered by health insurance were, in theory, entitled to health care at county facilities, clinics or hospitals. But they were often of either very substandard quality, or they were inconveniently located, and people didn't have transportation, et cetera, et cetera. Therefore, it was a fact, everybody knew it, that frequently they had to spend money out of pocket. But nobody knew how much, or for what purposes, et cetera. So, up to that point, we had had to rely on a ragtag assortment of sources and try to put them all together into a whole, which was very unsatisfactory and very inaccurate. I had the idea of selecting a community of a manageable size and yet had a reasonably good representation of people over 65. And instead of going with the vagaries of a sample, we would interview every person in the community who was over 65 and get their story. And by doing some research in the census, the most recent census available, I thought that the town of Capitola, which is in Santa Cruz County, would be just about the right size to be manageable and had a nice representation group of the elderly. Some of whom would be on public assistance, some of whom wouldn't, and so forth. But we wouldn't bother with a sample. We would try to get them all. Well, I laid this idea before my immediate supervisor, Bruce Walter, and he loved it. Then we had to sell it to Dr. Breslow. And as long as he had some money in the kitty, he went along with it also. So anyway, that was also on my plate, along with all of these extracurricular activities. And speaking of my family obligations, we were now in the month of May, and lo and behold, I was about to become a father again. And on May 30th, my youngest child, a daughter named Dorothy, was born. Driving back and forth between Martinez and Berkeley, and then between Martinez and Santa Cruz, all got to be a bit much. More than a bit much. I had to begin thinking of moving to Berkeley. Back to the subject of the subscribers interim committee. At the second meeting we held, the people who had come the first time were still interested, and at the second meeting we had about 50 people. once again just to exchange ideas. And some strong ideas began to emerge in the form of what might be called the Berkeley left wing. I think they were probably all former Trotskyites or Maoists or Stalinists or one stripe or another of authoritarian personalities. And I laughed, but it wasn't a laughing matter, to those who were trying to start organizations in Berkeley, which were relatively liberal in the best sense of the word, meaning open-minded, open to possibilities, open to suggestions, rather than with fixed ideas. They were the death of many and many a Berkeley organization, such as the Berkeley Co-op. And now that I look back on it, I didn't know all of this at the time. But the thing which saved KPFA from its foundation by the handful of Quaker conscientious objectors was that the decision making was by this self-appointed and self-perpetuating group of people who agreed on one thing, which was that they weren't rigid ideologues beholden to any particular political agenda. Well, to make a long story short, the subscribers interim committee was taken over by the Red Hots, another term that some of us use to apply to these people. One of them was a program contributor on KPFA itself. It was a slightly different from the commentary series. This fellow, whose name was William Mandel, had taught himself Russian, and he subscribed to Pravda and Izvestia and the other Russian publications. And so he had a half-hour program rather than the 15 minutes that I and the other commentators were allowed. And he was on every week rather than once a month. So he was one of the Red Hots. And he had an acolyte, a follower named Jeremy Jenkin, who had no attachment to the station, but he was ideologically attached to William Mandel. And so the two of them became real powers within the subscribers interim committee, and they were able to dominate. They were very articulate, very persuasive and persistent, and I just could not see myself turning from all of my other obligations to engage in this fight. And so I resigned, and within a month or so, the subscribers' interim committee went out of existence. At this point, I had followed up my initial commentary about the KPFA situation with a couple of follow-up commentaries on the subject of organizational democracy. And I felt liberated from any necessity of continuing as a commentator on a single subject, that is, farm labor. I had never signed a contract in which I would be identified as a specialist in any such way. And so I took it upon myself to start commenting about various things. I began to have somebody on the station staff introduce me at the beginning of each of my commentaries as a social analyst or something like that. I suppose I could look it up. Can't remember exactly what I called myself, but it was something very broad like that. And then at the end of each commentary, I would ask the announcer at the station to read an invitation to any listener who would like a copy of my script to write to me in care of Station KPFA Berkeley. And people started doing so. There came a time after a few months of this that the little squib that the announcer was supposed to add at the end got lost, and for several months I didn't get any letters, and I didn't know why. And so I started telling the listener at the end of my commentary in my own voice that if they were interested, they could get a copy of the script by writing to me at my post office box. And so the letters started coming in again. Now, I think I've come to the end of what I have to say tonight. So, let's ask if there are any questions or comments or criticisms.
Did you, so the Vietnam War is going on by this point, right?
Pardon me?
The Vietnam War?
Oh, very much so.
Did you comment on that?
Wait a minute. Okay, no, so. It was not going on very much so. It was going on.
But America...
We're now talking about 64.
Increased American involvement hadn't started yet.
It was, well...
Or it was ramping up.
There were several thousand there. But it was not the subject of demonstrations or anything like that at this point. That came... And, in fact, we're now up to, I've already talked about May. To get ahead of ourselves a little bit, by September of that same year, 1964, all hell broke loose on the Berkeley campus. The free speech movement began. That certainly will be part of my discussion next time. But even that movement was nothing like the Vietnam demonstrations. But they certainly were powerful in Berkeley later on. And had much to do with the fact LBJ didn't run again for president in 68, when he would normally have done so and been overwhelmingly reelected if it hadn't been for Vietnam. Oh, that was a very... almost as disastrous as the one in Iraq. But not quite.
Gene, you got anything?
What happened with the strike and struggle at KPFA?
The strike at KPFA was resolved by the Board of Trustees, which I have commented upon as being unelected. But all powerful in their own way. They ordered management to give the union whatever it wanted.
Was the union striking for any issue other than the firing of Elsa Knight Thompson?
I can't recall the details.
Did she get reinstated?
If I had more time, she got reinstated.
And Trevor Thomas stayed on too?
Trevor Thomas resigned, I believe.
Huh. So she won.
Well, in a way. I would have to do a little research. There were probably some issues of overtime and recognition of shop stewards and blah, 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 but it was a truce, really. The station has gone through agonies ever since. Mm-hmm. At the moment, it seems to be relatively quiescent. But it's always been controversial and divided by factions. They have a library. That's a library of former programs, which has some pretty good stuff in it about farm labor and so forth. I don't know whether they have any of my commentaries in there or not. I've got quite a few tapes of my own. And I used to mimeograph the scripts and send out copies. One of them, I'll be talking about some of them as time goes by.
Okay.
One of them, I got 200 or 250 letters. And that was my most popular. I lasted longer than I thought I might before they fired me. I lasted nearly 10 years there. Longer than I did on any of my paid jobs.